Guest today is Alison Brown, multiple awards, Grammy Player of the Year, you name it. She's a producer. She's an engineer, sound engineer. She owns and operates Compass Records, a very successful recording company in Nashville. This is the 20th anniversary of an album. I couldn't believe it was 20 years. We talk about that very issue, Fairweather, which did get a Grammy Award for one of the tunes that we will play, Leaving Cottondale. You've heard some cuts from the album already today in the first hour of the program. We're going to talk to Alison Brown about the 20th anniversary, about putting that album together, about the fact that it's now going to be made available on vinyl. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks again, Alison Brown, for always being available. A wonderful guest, as always. I don't even know how many times she's been on Unreal Bluegrass, but they're always very enjoyable and lots to talk about. For the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard the title cut, Fairweather, from an incredible album released on the Compass label, title cut. The album from my guest today, happily, Alison Brown. How are you, Alison?
Doing great. How are you, Steve?
Doing very well. I got the news the other day, and I thought, no, wait a minute. It can't be 20 years since Fairweather. I still think, on my CD, I still think I have a little bit of that clingy cellophane that you can't get every piece of it off. And to me, it seems like it's still new physically, but it's a great album. 20 years after, that's amazing to me. That's a great album, but for 20 years looking back, it must be a moment for you to think, oh, yeah, that was 20 years ago.
Yeah, it is. Well, you know, for me, it was pre-kid, so that kind of helps make it seem like a little bit longer ago than it might for you. So, but yeah, definitely, it was a milestone for me in a lot of ways, and I'm really proud, like looking back at it, how well the tracks hold up. I mean, I don't think that they sound 20 years old. I feel like they still seem relevant.
I think they have your imprint all over all of them. I think I've said this before. I think you have great taste in what you play and how you choose to play it, and the artists that you bring onto an album. And this is loaded with Nissi Raines and Todd Phillips, Gary West, Daryl Anger, Stuart Duncan, Tony Rice, David Greer. And I'm not even talking about the singers, the vocalists that you brought into, and I don't want to leave anybody out, but this album is loaded with people that are great, were great, continue to be great today.
Well, thank you. Yes, I think that's one of the really nice things about bluegrass music is people are able to have careers in our music that, you know, kind of can start when they're teenagers and hopefully end when they're octogenarians or even older. And that's something that's different than pop music. But, you know, I think that, you know, the cast of characters that you just mentioned, they're all, their careers are really as vibrant as they were 20 years ago, you know, really for the most part.
We've talked about this before, but I mentioned Compass as being the label. That's a label that mid-90s was when you started with Compass?
Yeah, we launched in 95, and this is actually our 25th year. And that was part of the impetus for putting this record out on vinyl, because when it came out, people weren't putting out vinyl. So now everything old is new again. And so it seemed like a great opportunity to put it out on vinyl, and something that we're doing with some of our other catalog releases, too, as we celebrate our 25th.
What do you think about vinyl? It'll never be the market that it was. CDs will never be the market. Well, we could be wrong. Some technology could change. But vinyl releases like this, what you're talking about, and the other things that you have at Compass that are being released on vinyl, they're taking up a larger percentage of sales, but that is such a small sliver compared to what sales used to be overall.
Yes.
So it's clearly a niche market.
Yes.
And you have to really first of all, you have to hope people can still keep buying phonographs, which they're coming back. You can find them if you look for them.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, my daughter, who's 18 now, she loves her vinyls, as she calls them. And I think for, you know, a generation that grew up just listening to music on an iPhone speaker, you know, it's a revelation to sit in front of two speakers and listen to a vinyl, as she would say.
A vinyl.
So, you know, so it's kind of an interesting moment because it's revelatory for a younger generation, even though it seems a little anachronistic for people our age. But you're right, it's definitely a niche thing. I love the fact that with vinyl, you have artwork to look at and you can have liner notes to look at, and we've lost all of that in the digital, you know, with the pure digital side of things.
Well,
but,
I mean,
you know, it's obviously, you know, the carrying cost is high. So from that point of view on the label side, I'm always like, oh, right, vinyl. We have to do that thing.
You were probably like me. Is that what, you know, I got an education for what it was in record stores, reading album covers and finding out who played it. And I'd go find that person. And you know, the CDs have a different sound, I think. I think some of the arguments for and against vinyl versus CDs are sometimes I get lost in the weeds because I'm not that much of a technical person. I think some of us miss that, you know, when the needle hits the vinyl, there's that little bit of a hiss, which maybe that's something that we're so used to hearing. But I miss the fact that, first of all, record stores, I don't know where you find one anymore, but vinyl had so much more room. And you could put so much more information, and there's so many great, you know, albums that you could find. And now you have to kind of fit it into the CD package. And you're right. You're talking about younger children. They hear everything on their phone.
Yeah.
And it has no frequency. It has no range of frequency in it. They just hear it's almost like they've gone back to, I guess, when we were younger, if you had an AM radio, you could stick in your ear. That's about the best you could do under the circumstances. It's like we've gone back to that. Just get the sound without any range of frequency into the music.
Yeah, exactly. So it really is a revelation for young people to sit and listen to vinyl. I think because they're sitting in front of speakers, and they're actually sitting, like, you can't, like, walk around or do a lot of other things while you're listening to a record. You know what I mean? You kind of have to be in that room.
And you have to turn it over.
That's right. That's right. So it's a different commitment and relationship with the product. It's really kind of a beautiful thing. I mean, so I'm glad that we're doing it. And it's something now, like with most of our frontline releases on Compass over the last 3 years, I'd say, most of the time we're doing vinyl too. But it's a limited market, like you said, and there are stores, you know, that do sell vinyl, but we don't press nearly as many copies of the vinyl as we would a CD. And even then, we're pressing less of everything than we did before. You know, streaming and digital consumption.
I want to get off of this because I want to focus back on the album Fair Weather and the fact and that song even that we're going to talk about. But I get a lot of things from the radio point of view as downloads from emails, which is a handy thing to do. But then I'm even one step away from holding the CD, which for whatever reason, I like to have something in my hand. I don't know why that is. I'm sure I'll get over it. But that's also coming more and more. The direct labels are directly sending to, I guess, radio, I don't know where else they would send them to, but things that can be downloaded directly from their website. I don't mean the intermediate person that can provide it. I mean the labels are now mailing to me albums.
Are mailing to you digital links to albums, you mean?
Yeah, and it's not through AirPlay Direct. It's just like here it is, or the downloads. Yeah, I get those all the time now. So even the CDs are vanishing from my world.
Right, and it's a challenge for labels. It's not that we want to have to do that, but, you know, when you consider the manufacturing cost and the mailing cost on records where sales are just declining just because of the way, well, I would say gross revenue is declining just because of the format shift. You know, we're constantly trying to figure out how to keep getting the music out there and service, you know, folks like you who help, you know, create awareness for what we do, but not break the bank and have it all work.
Oh yeah, I think it's a great. So. Yeah, I think it's a great way to distribute music, but it's I can just go to my email and I can download an album, and right. I don't even have to access another third party to get to it. Which I mentioned AirPlay Direct. I think their labels are sort of releasing things a single at a time, and then they're releasing things directly to me as an example, and then I can download them directly as a download of a digital, and then my radio play comes out as it does, but it's entirely different. So there, but let's talk about Fairweather again.
Let's go back 20 years. I mean, life was simpler.
Yes, it was. And so the opening tune that I played, the title cut Fairweather, is, there's Vince Gill, there's a lot you have, and I didn't mention many of the singers as I was going through the guests, but the selection of players and vocalists that you have on this, and starting off with Fairweather, let's talk a little bit about that song.
Right. Well, I grew up in Southern California, and as did Stuart Duncan, and he and I played together quite a bit when we were teenagers. And we had this idea of going up to Knott's Berry Farm to enter their band contest. They were having like a banjo, fiddle, and band contest one afternoon. So we decided that we'd enter as a duo, And when we got there, we ran into Steve and Vince and Gene, who were going to enter as a trio. So we decided to kind of band together, and we won the band contest, which was super fun. And so then, you know, kind of after that, you know, we got a chance to play with Steve and Gene and Vince, you know, occasionally here and there. And when Stuart and I were recording Pre-Sequel, which was my first recording, and maybe Stuart's first recording too, we had Gene and Steve were our backing band. So I really got to know those guys when I was a teenager, and one day Gene, or I think it was Steve, gave me a copy of Fairweather, like his, like a demo of it. And I just thought it was a great song. And then very sadly, Steve died in a private plane crash in the mid-80s. And then I'd had it in the back of my mind that it would be great to do that song sometime, and this record seemed like the perfect opportunity to get Vince and Gene and Stuart and me together to tribute both the song and Steve.
It's a great song. You liked it enough to make it the title of the album.
Well, I like the kind of the innuendo of the fair, of the fair word, you know.
There, on the album, there are, I have 12 tracks, I've counted correctly, I think. There's I have 8 instrumentals. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that does.
And then there's 4 songs with vocalists, and you have on that, you had Vince Gill and Gene, and on Fairweather. You also had Claire Lynch on a tune that sometimes is one of those things that gets stuck in my head when I put it in a program, and I do Hummingbird. I just think it's one of those perfect songs for Claire. Maybe every song she sings sounds perfect from her. I even like her version of Hitchcock Railway, which people have to think that was an old Joe Cocker song. But that's a great combination of Claire's voice and that Hummingbird song.
Yeah,
which is one of
she's a great singer. That song actually came to me through it was a Compass release that we did from a very well known Scottish singer named Eddie Reader, and Eddie recorded it. Boo Hewerdine wrote it, and we got to know both Eddie and Boo when we were touring in the UK, and then, like I said, put out Eddie's records and some of Boo's records too. But when I heard that song, I could really relate to like the instrumental figure, and plus I thought I could really imagine Claire's voice on it. So, yeah, thank you for saying that. I mean, she even still does it in her set sometimes. I think it was a good pairing of song and voice.
It is, and that's so much of the part of. I mean, not only, I'm talking to Allison Brown, if you're just tuning in, not only are you, you know, the banjo player, you have a vision, I think, because of your, as a producer and an owner of Compass, I think you maybe have a bigger vision, or what we'd say a higher look down on things and your choices. I'm always interested in choices that are made like that, which I just think that was a perfect combination. I think you're right. I've heard her play it. I've heard her play it since it's come out on this Fairweather album. Sam Bush, we're going to play that tune as we're leaving out of here, but I don't hear, whenever I hear, I love Elvis Costello, I think I have everything he's ever done, but when I hear Every Day I Write the Book in my mind, it's Sam's voice.
I know what you mean. Sam brought such a great spirit to it, and you know, it has that weird line, you know, when you find strange hands in your sweater, and I just remember, you know, Sam was like, I don't know about that, but every time I hear him say that, he really sells it. I just love it.
So 20 years of listening to this for me, I have things that I linger over often, and sometimes I get hung up on Girls Breakdown, and I'm just going to kind of bounce around for a minute, Allison. I want you to help me look back on this thing, but Girls Breakdown, you use on banjo on that detuners. I know what they are. I've used them, but maybe I don't know that everybody knows what they are. But Girls Breakdown as opposed to Earl's Breakdown, which everybody might recognize, but the detuners that you're using, they have an effect that's recognizable right away. Earl did it. Everybody else did it. You do it on this song. But it allows, will you tell me what it allows a banjo player to? You can explain it better than I can.
Right. So it allows you to set the pitch of a string in two places so that you can essentially turn the string, change the pitch of the string, and have it go to the right pitch. How is that?
That's perfect. And exactly the number of words. I would have taken way too long. So Girls Breakdown is one of those great banjo tunes, as is Leaving Cottontail, which we're going to lead up to a minute in just a second. But there's plenty of bluegrass. There's plenty of great vocals. We've already mentioned Sam Bush and Claire Lynch on the Hummingbird song, and you use Tim O'Brien on Everybody's Talking, which is the you know, if you think of Midnight Cowboy, it's Everybody's Talking. Harry Nilsson singing Everybody's Talking. And you
great
chose
song.
Tim. It is a great song. And Harry Nilsson was a great singer. But again, Tim, I don't know that there's a better voice in bluegrass or whatever kind of music he wants to do. He has no range limits. And Tim O'Brien, you choose to do Everybody's Talking, which must have been, I doubt that Tim would have been hesitant to do it because he has such great range. But I don't know many people that would want to step up to the mic and try to sing Everybody's Talking.
Well, you know, it's funny that I think that particular song was Gary's idea, Gary West. And Gary has this memory of, like, getting on some flight. We were doing a bunch of touring around that time with Newgrange, which was a band that included Daryl Anger and Mike Marshall and Tim
great.
And Todd Phillips and Phil Lomberg.
And still the best Christmas season album ever is The Heritage. Still the absolute best. It's the absolute best. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're nice to say that. That's how the band got together, but then it was so much fun doing the Christmas tour around that record that we're like, oh, we should just kind of be a band for a little while and make a band record. And so we made a band record, and then we were out doing some dates. And then, you know, I was like, well, I'd love to have everybody play on this track. And then Gary suggested, we was like, Tim, what would you think about singing Everybody's Talking? And Tim was like, huh, yep, wish I thought of that idea. So it is. It's a perfect fit for his voice, and it's a perfect fit for his persona, too.
Yeah, it is. It is. He's got that. Yeah. Yeah. You nailed it again. So everybody. So Gary contributes that and mentions it to Tim. So that's why this is still Fairweather is still such a great. It hasn't aged. It's 20 years old. 20 years is not that long in the music business anymore, but it hasn't aged. The tunes and the vocals and the musicianship on this could have been released yesterday, and it would still be fresh in today's market, I think, in the music world.
Well, thank you for saying that. I appreciate that.
And I know that we've talked before, you and I, about some jazz albums that you did. And I know that you did some before and maybe after this also, so that you're always kind of expressing yourself in different types of music. We went into some detail about those. So this has a little bit of, it's like I don't know exactly how to classify Poe's Picking Party. And I also have trouble with, and I don't need to classify him, but Shake and Howdy has one of that little that start that sounds like it's going to be an old song. By the way, it almost sounds like I had it in my head a minute ago. But Shake and Howdy, start with that first. That's another instrumental on the album.
Yeah, Shake and Howdy. Like I said, we've been around the time that I was making this record, spending a lot of time around Mike and Daryl, and Mike Marshall and Daryl Anger. They're like musical twins. It's
yes.
Like when they play together, they're like reading each other's minds.
That's right.
Anticipating the other's next move. And they're such amazing players that they can play anything and then play it in harmony. And so then I thought, well, it'd be fun to write a tune with too many notes and throw it at those guys. So that was the idea. And it is sort of, you know, derivative of like those kind of fiddle tuney reels, you know, with five parts or whatever and various key changes and stuff like that. It's a beast to play, but those guys just make it sound so easy, you know. It was very fun.
You had a strong ensemble around you when you did this, and like you said, all these people, they had careers up till then, but they still are strong. David Greer may be stronger now than he ever was. Just released an album last year, and David Greer probably when you did this probably had a beard that was only like half an inch long. And now it's like 2 feet long.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right about that. That's really funny.
I want to play. You had a Grammy Award-winning instrumental on this, "Leaving Cottontail," the 2000 Grammy for Best Country, instrumental, country music instrumental. I want you to lead into "Leaving Cottontail." We'll play that, and I'll come back and talk to you again. But give us a little run-up to "Leaving Cottontail," which was the Grammy Award-winning song off of Fairweather.
Sure. Well, I wrote that song and recorded it on my first solo record, which is called Simple Pleasures, that came out on Vanguard when I was playing in Alison Krauss's band, so in the very early 90s. And we played that tune a bunch, and then the band went over to Japan, and I met a Japanese banjo-playing friend who figured out how to play Leaving Cottontail in harmony. So it sounded really cool, and I just kind of filed it away as that could be kind of cool to do someday, so we were working on this record, I thought, well, why not get Bela and see if he would do a duet with me on Leaving Cottontail? And that was really what sparked this version of that tune.
It's a great version. I do have Simple Pleasures in my library, so I kind of knew where it came from. But let's play for the audience now. Thanks for reminding me of that. Let's play Leaving Cottontail, Grammy Award-winning song from this 20th anniversary of Fairweather. Just did a wonderful lead-in by Allison Brown, my guest today on Unreal Bluegrass, and we'll come right back and talk a little bit more. All right, there you heard the Grammy Award-winning Leaving Cottontail. Nice lead-up, Allison Brown, for what that tune was about. The very last tune on the album of the 12 that are here is just a very delicate banjo solo entitled Pretty Thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Sweet Thing, actually.
Oh, it's Sweet Thing. I'm sorry. See, I can't read my own handwriting. It's going to be the death of me at some point.
Well, no, that's okay. That really came from a lullaby that my grandmother used to sing. And she was, like, not a singer or anything. She was just, you know, a person who had this little melody. And the melody just always stuck in my head, so I decided to turn it into a little bit more by, you know, reharmonizing it a little bit and adding a bridge and modulation. I'm glad that part didn't get lost in the banjo rendition of it. But yeah, it was really just a sweet little tune for my grandma.
I think if you just tuned in, I'm talking to Allison Brown. Kind enough to chat with me on. I guess I got an email announcement from Compass about the 20th anniversary of Fairweather, and thought, geez, I have to go back and re-explore this. This released way before I began doing this. Unreal Bluegrass, that gave me a chance to talk to you. So many great tunes on it. Late on Arrival, I think, is the most instantly bluegrass. It's the first cut. It's a very up-tempo tune. It's an instrumental that's also on the album of the 8 that are on there.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that one's interesting because I really had intended that it would just to cut it with a traditional bluegrass band. And you probably notice it doesn't have any guitar on it. And that's because the guitar player who I booked for the session was late. He was running late. And Sam, who was also on the session, Sam Bush playing mandolin, had to leave for a flight. He was actually going out to the play on the telecast part of the Grammy Awards. So he had to be on a plane. So we decided to just cut it as a trio with me and Todd and Sam. And we were really proud when we got back into the control room to listen to it that the tempo just really stayed locked right there. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
145 to 150. It's lickety split for sure.
It's moving for sure.
And you know, then you know, we got the fiddle on there with Stuart, you know, playing his amazing Stuart stuff, and just kind of realized that it was really more unique without the guitar. So that kind of we backed into that way.
Well, it kicks off the album at a nice tempo, and then the tunes vary. I mean, you described Sweet Thing as exactly as it is, a lullaby, of course, and there's different sounds throughout the album with the vocals, and you've always borrowed from, and I think maybe even from on Song of the Banjo, the most recent one that I know of that you released under your name, you borrowed songs from other types of music, so I think that you listen to a lot of different things, or people present a lot of different things to you from different genres, and you were able to incorporate them into what you want to do as an artist.
Yeah, definitely listen to a lot of stuff, and Gary has a lot of input into those, you know, ideas too, and his background, you know, coming more from a pop R&B kind of side of things. He knows of songs that I didn't, you know, hear when they were hits in the first place, you know, because I was busy listening to Flatt & Scruggs and Ralph Stanley.
The anymore, as we sit here in 2020, the lines are so blurred now. There are so many great musicians coming out that are ostensibly in the bluegrass area, and they're coming, and there's so many of them in the Northeast, and I think it's because of Berkeley and the schools and the gatherings up there that so many musicians go there or visit through there and experience that whole vibe that they start out being very traditional, but they bring in all kinds of different sounds also, and you have a different. It's coming out differently. It's still bluegrass in the heart of the people making it, but it's the influences, which has to happen. I mean, music changes all the time, so it's being changed again. I don't attribute it just to Berkeley, but I've always thought that whenever I go up northwest, northeast, there's so many young bands that are so amazing, and they seem to be coming out of that tradition.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I think when the story of, you know, the evolution of bluegrass is looked back on in 40 or 50 years from now, I think that those programs like the Berklee American Roots Program or what they have going at ETSU or Loveland, where kids are really able to study music alongside these instruments that traditionally have just been oral tradition instruments. It's really an exciting part of what's happening in bluegrass music, like the chamber grass side of things.
Yeah.
And this incredible musicianship, people who love playing fiddle tunes, but yet really understand music theory and harmony.
That's the word I was looking for, is music theory. They come out of there with a lot of great players that learn, you know, in their house or in their home or in their neighborhood, are incredibly skilled, but they don't have this theory, this weapon available to them. And now, so they can just do all these, and you really have to listen to pick it up sometimes. They don't try to beat you over the head, the ones that I'm thinking of, but it's all there, and they can explain why every note was changed or why everything was done. But it's amazing, their knowledge and their skill. It's not just that they know a lot. Their skill is just remarkable.
It's great, and what's even more fascinating is that they are able to synthesize their love of traditional music, which some people might say, well, if you've got all that learning, why do you want to mess around with a fiddle tune that's got three chords?
Yeah.
But yet they're as captivated by that music as I was and as we still are. You know?
Yeah, that's always...
And they're kind of helping to reinvent it, because like you said, you know, music has to evolve, and what inspired bluegrass music, you know, kind of the transition from a rural way of life that really no longer exists anywhere in the country.
No, it doesn't.
To a more industrialized society, that informs the first generation, but new things have to inform the current generation.
Yeah, I think so. It's still going to be a touchstone, and I think most of them will go back and find those original sources. And if they can see them live, you know, they'll go see them live. It's getting more difficult. You and I were lucky to see the people that essentially invented this type of music. You and I could do that.
I know. It's crazy. We're so lucky to have had that moment. It's like, I wonder what will bluegrass be like when really the first generation is just a memory.
Yeah.
You know, or just stories that old people like we can tell.
You know? Yeah, I think you're right. Of course, there's so many videos now. You can almost find a video of anybody that any day of any year. If you can access it on YouTube, but I don't think it's the same as standing in the presence of. Let's say you're in the front row of an audience, and you're in the presence of Ralph or Bill Monroe. That you'll never get that from. You'll never feel that essence of standing in the presence of, I don't think.
Exactly, or that moment of having an icon like that actually talk to you.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a huge thing.
Listen, I want to talk about anything that you may have in the works. I know that Compass is very busy. I know that you're still working in these COVID times, as we would call them, on records to release. And anything you want to let the audience know about what may be coming up, maybe from you or from other artists, feel free. Then I want to get into Every Day I Write the Book before we close it out.
Sure. Well, we just put out a new record from Special Consensus, which I produced. I think it's the fifth one that I produced from those guys, called Chicago Barn Dance, which was one of our, you know, early COVID months releases. I think that one came out just a couple of months ago, and that's been a lot of fun. And then I've been, you know, kind of chipping away at a new record of my own that's tentatively, I think, going to be called On Banjo.
On Banjo, okay.
It's I kind of, you know, they keep telling us, the DSPs, the digital platforms, keep saying how liberating it should be that music is kind of returning to a singles format. It should really, like, liberate an artist's thinking, so I'm trying to embrace that idea. And you know, historically, when I've put together a record, I've tried to come up with a set of music that a listener could kind of stay in the same mood for, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you put on this record because you want to feel this certain way. And now I'm trying to think about things, each thing is its own kind of single, and an album is a collection of singles more. And in a way, it is liberating because, you know, for this record, I want to have some things that are more on the bluegrass side, and I've got a couple of things that are maybe a little bit more classically influenced, collaborations like with a string quartet or classical guitar. And
you had mentioned, you know, the last time we talked, you mentioned Sharon Nisbon as a possibility.
Yes, she is. I wrote a tune for her.
Okay.
And we were, you know, going to be recording it together this spring. Now I'm trying to figure out how to record it if we have to do it remotely. But yes, like that kind of thing, you know, it's like, why not just why not just reach in all the directions you want to reach and just have it be, you know, just different spokes on the wheel of the banjo. So that's the way I'm thinking about it. Why can't you have, like, a bluegrass song sitting next to something with Sharon Isbell?
Yeah.
We'll find out why not, I guess, when this comes out.
It sounds like a dream for me. That's exactly where what my wheelhouse is. That's exactly what I want to hear. You know, it's funny. I don't think that you went into, let's say, Song of the Banjo, which was, I don't, how many years ago that was? It wasn't 20 yet, because I know that we talked about it recently.
No, that was in 2015.
2015, okay, it's only 5 years old. So that album, it's not a concept album, but they're related, and I think that's the point you were just making. That it's not like, and you have some language in there in the opening part about the banjo from a writing, I forget what it is now, you would remember, but you weren't doing concept albums as a, but you were trying to relate them all like you just described so well as a certain feeling as you're listening to the entire thing. And I think Fair Weather follows that because the changes throughout it aren't that dramatic. I mean, they also convey the same feeling, I think, as I listen to it. But yeah, you're right. Singles are being released. And I think that's going to happen more and more. It's almost like we're going backwards further and further. Now we're releasing 45.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 45 RPM records that we used to buy at the drugstore.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's a really interesting time. And in some way, I guess it is liberating artistically. So I'm trying to embrace that idea. Because really, you know, if three disparate ideas move you, why can't they all sit together on one piece of plastic?
I like the idea.
We'll see what happens with it. Sequencing it could be a challenge, but...
Boy, that's true.
We'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Yeah, okay. Listen, I want you to... We've talked a little bit about everything on the album. Happy 20th anniversary to Fairweather and to you on such a great album that just as fresh today as it was in 2000. But we talked a little bit about some of the guests. We talked a little bit about Sam Bush lending his mandolin to a version of Late on Arrival, but he also did this incredible vocal of an Elvis Costello tune of Every Day I Write the Book. I want you to lead into that. We're going to play that for the audience. I will let you go right as we do that.
Sure. Well, the idea to cover Elvis Costello's song was also Gary's idea, and there's a hook in Elvis Costello's version that just... it was completely relatable to the banjo, so that was sort of the way in. And then when I was trying to imagine who would sound great singing, it's just kind of the spirit and attitude that Sam brings just really seemed to mesh perfectly with the song. And he was like, I don't know, Al, but I'll give it a try.
Yeah.
And like I mentioned earlier, that line about, you know, when you find strange hands in your sweater, he was like, I don't know, but, you know, he really does make it work. I mean, I really do believe it. And it's we've had a chance to do it together live a few times.
Oh, have you?
In fact,
oh, great.
Yeah, he sat in with the First Ladies of Bluegrass at Telluride last year.
Oh, yeah.
And we had him do that song, and every time I get a chance to stand next to Sam when he's doing that, it's just such a kick. It really works well.
And see, we've done this whole thing. We're going to play that song. We haven't mentioned the First Ladies of Bluegrass, which is a great. I want you to just mention that since you brought it up, what that is,
sure.
And we'll get back and play this tune.
Absolutely. So a couple of years ago, when Molly Tuttle, who became the first female guitar player of the year from the International Bluegrass Music Association, when she won, I realized that we had a full complement of a band of women who had won the Instrumentalist of the Year, and really in most cases, except for the banjo category, are the only women to ever win in their category. So I thought that was pretty cool, and I was producing a record for Missy Raines at the time, actually, you know, like literally in the studio, like thinking about who should we get to be on this track, thinking about that idea. So I gathered up everybody who's now a First Lady, and we recorded the track Swept Away from Missy Raines' record.
Royal Traveler, is that what it's called?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And since that time, you know, we've had a chance to play, you know, a couple of shows here and there together, and it's an amazingly powerful thing. It surprises me when we get a chance to do it, to see the audience reaction, because it's not just like, oh, yeah, you know, these guys can all play.
Mm-hmm.
There's something much more emotional in the audience reaction that literally, you know, seems to bring many people to tears. And I think it's something about the moment in time and just, I don't know, the female forward, you know, you can really do anything. And also the idea of having role models, which I just think is so important, really, in any field or endeavor, you know?
Yes, so, absolutely. So it must feel... go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's always very, very special when we get to play together for the music, but then also to see that connection with the audience.
And you led pretty much into what I was going to say when I was stepping on your words. It must be being on stage and looking around and seeing all these great players and being part of this First Ladies of Bluegrass. It must be a little bit inspiring, and also it's got to be really get you in the heart that you're doing this, you're doing it at a level that's as good as any that can be put together in the world. And it just must be such a great thinking about where it came from and where that band stands. It's an all-star lineup.
Yeah, it's really special. You know, it's in some way it's amazing that it took that long for it to happen in bluegrass music. I mean, I'm thinking like maybe 27 years or something like that it took for a woman to win every instrumental category.
Yeah.
Except we still don't have a dobro player of the year, but hopefully she'll come along.
That's right.
So it's a long time, but, you know, it just bodes so well for the future of our music, I think, and the future diversity that I think the music needs to have for it to stay relevant.
Absolutely. Absolutely it does. And you're right, the role models, there must be out in those audiences, and I don't know if you play where you can't see the audience all the way back, there's got to be young women, there's got to be little girls
who are
looking
the
up
best.
There. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, we always go sign T-shirts or whatever after the set, and that's our favorite part, and we get so many little girls who are starting to play, and it's wonderful to see them out there and feel like you have a hand in helping them reach for their dream.
And that will be their moment, like you had or I had, being in the presence of Bill Monroe or Ralph Stanley. That will be their moment, their connection. It will.
I don't know about that. Well,
no.
To God's ears, Steve.
No, it will. No, it absolutely will be. They will never forget those moments, and you can stay there. As the line diminishes and wait till everybody comes through, they will never forget that moment that they saw either you or the entire group of First Ladies of Bluegrass or any one of them separately. It's going to be forged in their memory forever, just like the ones we talked about that we experienced. So that will last. Trust me, that'll be burnt into their brain.
Well, it's really a privilege to be able to put something like that out there for people to get around.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, listen, Allison Brown's always wonderful to chat with you. You always bring so many things to my mind to try to find a way to ask, and you always answer everything better than I put it in the question that I'm putting. So I'm going to let you go. Well, so we'll look for new things from Compass and from Allison Brown in the next year or so. And as soon as we get those, we'll talk about that someday. And we're going to leave the audience now as Allison leaves. Give him some wonderful time. We're going to play that great version of, it's the only version I hear now, of Every Day I Write the Book. I can only hear it in Sam Bush's mind, and you've got it on Fair Weather, which just celebrated 20 years of being out there among us. So I will say goodbye to you, play that for the audience, and until we talk again.
Sounds great, Steve. Thank you so much for all your support.
Thank you.